This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the golf season is reaching its most important moment this week in Eastlake in Atlanta, the destination of $15 million, $20 million in all, but $15 million to the winner of the FedEx Cup Series will be known. It's an extraordinary amount of money. Rory McIlroy has actually won it twice, and it has had usually a great winner winning it. This week, the contenders, the main contenders, would be Patrick Cantlay, who won at the weekend and is top of the points table. Bryson DeChambeau, who is a person who has made a serious impression on golf, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. John Rahm, of course, and Tony Finau, a player who is a superb player but finds it difficult to putt and to win. And of course, after that, the Ryder Cup in Whistling Straits. Patrick Harrington is the GB Europe captain. And Steve Stricker, a very respected American golfer, is the US captain. The US are hot favourites to win it. But to talk about these things, I'm joined now by Eamon Lynch. He is rarity among golf writers. He is a superb writer. And his critical faculties remain intact. And if you Google him, you'll come upon some of his writing, which is really quite superb. And he joins us now from New York. Eamon, the Bryson DeChambeau story has probably dominated golf to some extent. He won the US Open last year now, and he is a remarkable phenomenon. And he has a real chance of winning the $15 million that are on offer this week in Atlanta. But of course, the Ryder Cup is also very much in our minds. On Sunday, DeChambeau lost a six-hole playoff to Patrick Cantlay, and anyone who was not inclined to take sides, I think even people who don't like taking sides would have been happy to see Cantlay beat DeChambeau. At least I was. Eamon, the reason I was pleased that Cantlay won, he's a very slow player, and I'm not mad about him, but DeChambeau seems to many of us who love golf and love watching it to be a bit of a tug. He hits the ball as far as he can, which is usually between 350 or, depending on the wind and the incline and the fairway, it could be 400 yards. Then he goes to find it. Then he has a good game around the greens, all right. But he never shouts four when he drives it. He rarely shouts four when he drives it into the gallery. This ball is travelling at 100 miles an hour or something like that. It's a deadly weapon. He is really not, it appears to many of us, a very nice person. And were he to become, if you like, the poster boy for golf by winning the FedEx Cup, and of course we'll see him in the Ryder Cup, it would be disappointing. Are we wrong? Because the American fans on the fairway appear to love him. He interacts very well with them, and yet it seems to me as a golf lover, that he really abuses the spirit of golf and the aesthetic, if you like, such as it is, and it is, the aesthetic of golf, which is about something other than pure power.
Well, I think that summary, Eamon, just kind of epitomizes the DeChambeau mystery here, because he is an extremely polarizing character, perhaps the most polarizing in the game right now. But there are plenty of people who enjoy watching DeChambeau in the way he plays the game. They think that he doesn't conduct himself in a manner any worse than a lot of other athletes in the modern world. But I also think it does speak to how much DeChambeau has kind of driven the news narrative in golf. And this has been going on all summer. It's almost every event he shows up at, he makes news or consumes oxygen based on something other than his actual play. And that goes back to, you know, Jack Nicklaus's Memorial Tournament in May, when he had fans ejected for calling him Brooksy, which began this now heckling that follows him everywhere. And it followed him through, you know, Detroit, where he refused to speak to the media when his caddy quit the day before the round. There was the issue at the Open Championship when he said his equipment sucks and denied that he doesn't shout four, despite the evidence in plenty of videos before and since that he doesn't. And, you know, there's just a constant issue with Bryson where it's never really related exclusively to his game. And
we should explain the context for the Brooksy comment. He's involved with a feud with Brooks Koepka, another outstanding golfer who has won four major titles in a very short space of time. They apparently don't like each other, although I saw some suggestion at the weekend that the feud was fiction and that they were both feeding off it. However, he is involved in this feud with Brooks Koepka, and the Brooksy shout that the gallery was shouting was related to their support for Koepka rather than DeChambeau.
Indeed, and this feud has been going on for a while. And when it started, I suppose it seemed fairly jocular in nature, and people were sort of amused by it. And it's gotten progressively less amusing, I suppose, as time has gone on. And that event in May or start of June, when DeChambeau had people ejected for calling him Brooksy, really took it up to another level on both parts, because all that did was ensure that DeChambeau would be followed by people saying the same thing in the future. And of course, Koepka had his sponsor, Michelob, give free beer to people who, as he put it, your day was cut short, which of course incentivizes other players or other fans to get involved. And I thought that kind of crossed the line, because you are now kind of using and incentivizing halfwits to start heckling a fellow competitor during a tournament. And that has carried on. But DeChambeau is not blameless in this, because there are many reasons why you could have fans ejected from a golf tournament, but calling one player by another player's name isn't one of them.
Yes.
And DeChambeau has sort of created this situation. And there was an incident on Sunday after he lost that playoff with Koepka with Cantlay, that was witnessed by Kevin Van Bunkelberg, a great writer for ESPN, as DeChambeau was heading towards the clubhouse after the loss. One fan said, "Nice job, Brooksy," after DeChambeau passed. And DeChambeau spun around in a rage and shouted, "Get the F out."
Yes.
And pointed to the cops to have him ejected. So it's clearly been corrosive to DeChambeau, because it gets to him. It follows him around the course all the time. And this leads you to where I think the crux of the issue is with DeChambeau. It doesn't matter what the situation is, whether it's his equipment at the Open, with that 44 strokes over the last nine holes at Torrey Pines that he said was just bad luck and nothing else when it cost him the US Open. Every time he's in an emotionally difficult situation, he can't handle it. He blows up. And that happens everywhere. And you know, you've played professional sports. You know that there are more difficult situations and more difficult losses than there are happy days.
Absolutely.
And wins. And he cannot process how he deals with those situations. He always makes it worse for himself. And it's interesting to watch. He either listens to bad advice from management, or ignores good advice from management, but neither one recommends the quality of his management if they have not been able to get through to him at this point, because clearly it's not working, whatever they've tried.
Yes, and there's something else about him, Eamon, and it's this. There is this belief in the ugly American, and it's still, I mean, embodied perhaps by Donald Trump, but also embodied by the 90 million people, 30% of the population in the United States, who won't take the COVID vaccine. DeChambeau told reporters that he didn't need the COVID-19 vaccine because he's healthy and wouldn't take a shot from someone more needy, which seems a bit self-serving. And then he got it. He got COVID-19. And this seems to us in Europe to personify in a golfer something that is distinctly at this moment in history American. And the other thing, of course, is the idea that you can overpower a golf course, that you can hit the ball 400 yards, sometimes, often, into a crowd of people. And then you go up there, you look at the problem, he's got a good short game when he's on, he's a good putter, and maybe in different circumstances he'd be a worthy champion. The other issue, of course, is the 3 stone that he put on in weight, the bulk up, which happened when there was no golf being played because of the pandemic. And he said he did it with milkshakes and steak. Now, I know something about that from my own experience in professional sport. You don't do it with milkshake and steak. So there's things around him that are actually detrimental to the game of golf as we see it.
Yeah, well, these, again, go to all of the issues why people seem to be pro or anti DeChambeau, and there's not much in between. In terms of, you know, I've always, and I know we've had this discussion before, when it comes to the weight gain and everything else, there's always been kind of the rumors and insinuations out there that there's something illicit. And my attitude is that may well be, but it's the kind of accusation that demands proof, and we haven't actually seen any proof to back that up at this stage. In terms of the overpowering of golf courses, you know, the same argument was made about Tiger, the same argument was made about Jack Nicklaus and Greg Norman in the day. He's doing it in a way and at a scale that nobody else is doing. But what's really interesting, despite the extent that he's hitting the ball as far as he is, he's not actually winning that often at all. To me, the most revealing moment in that entire playoff was on, I believe it was the third playoff hole, the first time they went to the par 3 17th hole. And Bryson hit it just short of the green, and then he completely stubbed his chip shot afterwards. And Paul Eisinger, who was doing the commentary on US television, immediately pointed out that he has the chipping yips.
Yeah.
And which, of course, you know, almost derailed Tiger several years ago, and has derailed many players over the years. And because if all of your clubs are the same length as his is, all of his irons, then it becomes really difficult to actually chip with any consistency, because, you know, there's a sand wedge that people chip with is a heck of a lot shorter than a 5-iron that they're going to hit iron shots with, but his aren't. And that little yippy chip was quite revealing, because then Eisinger pointed out that DeChambeau had started to take his putter from various positions around the green that most players at that level would chip from.
Yes.
So he's raised this issue of whether or not there is an issue around his short game. And that could be particularly problematic for a guy like DeChambeau, who's going to have to sort of rely on it to some extent. He's not particularly good with his wedges anyway, again, which a lot of people attribute to the single-length irons that are one of his little fads that he has going. But he's endlessly polarizing as a character, but he's box office. And that's why I think he's, in the grand scheme of things, he's terrific. For the game of golf, you don't have to like him, but people are certainly paying attention.
Right. Of course, Eisinger in his day was a winning Ryder Cup captain, if I'm my memory serves me right, Eamon. A terrific player, but an aggressive American in the classic mold.
Yeah, you see that in a lot of sports, I guess. You know the John McEnroes of the world were aggressive Americans, so were the Jimmy Connors, so... It's, Americans like winners, and they like winners who are sort of proud of winning and vow that they're going to win. So Eisinger was very much in that mold. There's a reason why he and Seve had their kind of head-to-heads in Ryder Cups, even off the course. They didn't much like each other, but he was very much a sort of driven captain, and he might actually have been the last captain of the American team who really, I think, did what would be considered a good job, or whose strategy would be claimed to be the result in a win. Obviously, they have won one since Paul Eisinger's win, but Eisinger was the guy who seemed to have a strategic approach to winning the Ryder Cup, which doesn't seem to be a big thing on the American side generally. It always seems to be the assumption that they're going to win simply because they have the better team, which they do on paper, at least every time we go to the Ryder Cup.
Yes, and they are warm favourites to win the Ryder Cup, and I hope we can come back to that in a few moments, Eamon. Just to talk about the FedEx Cup, $15 million is a lot of money. I think the total purse is $20 million, and whoever finishes last in the 30-man field will get $395,000. The format has been adjusted from time to time, and this year, like last year, the number one player in their rankings starts at minus 10, correct?
That's correct, yep. It's one of those weird systems where they just can't let the regular season die out and start fresh for the playoffs. So they've adjusted it, and the regular season points have always mattered in along with the points for the first two of the three playoff events. And what they've done for now the last 2 or 3 years here is try to just get rid of the points and create turn them into birdies, so that the leader in points starts at 10 under par all the way down to a bunch of guys then at even par.
And what does the next guy start at 8?
The next guy starts at 8. So we have Patrick Cantlay starts Thursday morning at 10 under, Tony Finau 8, DeChambeau 7, John Rahm 6, and then it progressively goes down for a bunch of guys at different points. Rory will start, for instance, at 2 under par, 8 strokes back.
Yeah, and Rory has won this twice and has good form in Atlanta at Eastlake, and has been showing signs. Obviously, he's in some form of transition. Is he in some form of transition with the coach he's now employed? Or is this generation? And I'm thinking of Justin Thomas. I'm thinking of Victor Hovland. DeChambeau, obviously, but not thinking too much about him whenever I can avoid it. Is Rory... has he been passed out, do you think, Eamon? Or is he in a period of adjustment that he will emerge from, as still, I think, many people regarded him for some time as the best golfer out there?
I think he's very much in the period of adjustment. He started working with Pete Cowan, a new swing coach, back in March at the Players' Championship, and there was a little placebo effect. He won... in April at the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow, which he'd won a couple of times before. But since then, it had been fairly desultory results for the most part. But something changed, I think, with him at the Olympics, where he got into that playoff that he lost for the bronze medal.
Yes.
Because since then, for instance, the following week, he finished 12th in Memphis at the WGC event there. And what was interesting about that week was it was the first time he had actually ranked first in the field in strokes gained off the tee, which essentially measures the both distance and accuracy of the driver. And it was the first time he'd ranked first in the field in that since last October in any tournament. And he played particularly well last week at the BMW Championship, finished fourth. Yes. And that was a tournament where, you know, the guy who finished second shot the lowest score ever shot on the PGA Tour without winning. And Rory was 21, 22 under par as well. And, you know, his putter was working, the driver was working. He's definitely showing signs that he's moving in the right direction. And I think one of the keys to that is, you know, when Rory worked with Michael Bannon, he never worked at tournaments together. Bannon might show up for a week at his house in Florida and they would work there. And then Rory would go off to a tournament. Michael was seldom seen out on the tour, whereas Pete Cowan's out there frequently. He's got a lot of guys he teaches, and Pete gets pretty intense on the range, working with players on specific swing moves. And he was doing that early in the relationship with Rory. Rory is now essentially not doing that at tournaments with Cowan. He arrives with whatever he's got and tries to work his way through it without muddying the waters any before he goes out to play on that given day. And I think that's starting to show some results as well. So he's trending in the right direction. I've no doubt if you asked him what he thinks of this year, he would say it was a write-off for him, because in the tournaments that really matter, he didn't perform. But certainly he's playing better at the end of this year than he's played for most of it.
Yeah, when some of my friends and I talk about him, I have huge respect for him. He's a remarkable person, and in the world of golf, a remarkably important person for what he represents in terms of the idea the Saudis came up with in resisting that. And in many other ways, he is an exemplary man. Is there a possibility, or is it in your mind or in the conversation, that he is actually too intelligent to be driven in the way Niklas, for example, was, Palmer was, Seve was, and others who have conquered the game of golf? Is there any sense that that's happened to him, or is he still hungry?
He's definitely still hungry. I mean, he was no less intelligent 7 years ago when he had four majors, which some people might actually say was conquering the game of golf. I just think once you get out of your early 20s, and DeChambeau will hit this point as well, right now he has the luxury where the only thing he has to think about is golf.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, in Rory's case, you get married, you have all of these business interests, you have a family. It's, you know, life throws up speed bumps. It gets a little more complicated than it was when you were 21, 22 years old. That's probably where his is. And I think Tiger skewed a perception here, Eamon, of how easy it is to win major championships. And Rory went on a tear and had four of them in the space of 3 years. But he's still right now a year younger than Phil Mickelson was when he won the first of his six.
Right.
So I think Rory's one of those guys who's, throughout his career, he's tended to ride waves pretty well. And he strikes me as the type who's waiting for the next wave to come. He's working towards it, waiting for it to come, and hoping he can ride it well. But in the time I've spent around him, which is quite a lot over the last 2-3 years in particular, I don't sense there's any hunger about it. Where the intelligence kicks in is, I think Rory might be more prone than others to ruminate on what he needs to do. And there's a great adage, there's a lot to be said for having the goldfish memory in this game, where, you know, if you ask Jack Nicklaus to tell you about a putt that he missed to lose a major, Jack will tell you he never did, because Jack can't remember. But Jack did miss putts to win majors. But that doesn't mean Jack can remember it and tell you about it, whereas other players will be able to sort of ruminate on it. And Dustin Johnson's the same way. You know, Dustin, if he wasn't as able to just dispense with bad memories as easily as he is, his career would have been over years ago because of what happened in multiple major championships that got away from him before he actually got one.
Yes.
So there's no real benefit in this game to being prone to kind of reflecting on the ups and downs of what has happened to you. Just water off a duck's back and move on is the best way to do it. But that's easier said than done for most people in most walks of life.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Just to go back briefly to DeChambeau, if he were to win in Atlanta, the whole lot, as it were, and he has a serious chance of doing it, well, two questions really, Eamon. How bloody awful would that be for golf and people like me, mugs, I have to admit, we know nothing much about it. How awful would it be for people who love golf's aesthetic? And the second question really is, will Eastlake suit DeChambeau's hit it and as far as you can and then deal with the next problem when you get up there?
Well, when you look at the guys who've won the last three or four at Eastlake, you've got guys like, you know, Xander Schauffele, Dustin Johnson, yep, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. So people who've hit it a long way tend to do very well there. And I'm actually in Atlanta right now and it is lashing rain and will do all day to the point where no one will be on the golf course today. And generally speaking, soft, wet golf courses tend to favour guys who hit it longer than anyone else because they're at least going to carry it farther out into the fairway.
And it's had Rory on a couple of occasions, hasn't it? The British Open and also PGA, I remember.
Yep, four of Rory's majors were actually won on golf courses that were comparatively soft versus the norm. So there's not a golf course now that you can really argue doesn't set up particularly well for a guy who hits it a very long way. It's with DeChambeau, the question will be whether or not there is a hangover from last week in terms of being able to refocus himself. He's going to start three strokes behind Patrick Cantlay, and there are a lot of other guys in there as well that you would look at them and go, well, can you afford to spot that guy three strokes starting the week? So, you know, he's got every chance of winning the $15 million. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing if he does. I get that he's not to everyone's cup of tea. He's not particularly to mine either, but he gets people interested and fired up about this game, whether we tend to enjoy it or if it's your style of golf or your style of personality is all a very subjective call, but he's certainly box office.
Is he an American hero for the times that we're living in?
Not necessarily. I think, you could actually make that argument because he is so polarizing. Nobody in this country really agrees on much anymore, and there are every bit as many people who dislike Bryson as those who like him. And you know, Bryson's one of those guys that, you know, people who are close to him will say that he doesn't understand why people don't like him and he just wants to be loved. Well, again, the inability to process the tough situations, the inability to stop kind of embarrassing himself with what he says in public and the inability to handle the reaction to it. I mean, the reason he's now gone, I believe it's 12 straight rounds without talking to any print media at all.
You wrote about that this week,
Yeah, it's because of they accurately reported his comments on the vaccines, which were made to reporters during a casual walk around several weeks ago. And he's had the hump since then. And, you know, at a certain point, he's got to learn to grow up. And he's not there yet. And it's a tough thing to be is childish in the public eye.
Right.
When you're at his level of success in a sport, because it doesn't get any easier.
Now, to the Ryder Cup, and I hope we can talk to you again before the Ryder Cup when the teams are known. Steve Stricker has a more daunting task, it seems to me, than Padraig Harrington. Padraig is stuck with his first nine, and I think he's three picks. Steve Stricker has six picks. Are the Americans worthy of being such hot favourites, do you think?
They are, because on paper they have a lot more guys who are in form than Padraig's team does. You look at Padraig's team, you know, Rory's obviously up and down, but Tyrrell Hatton hasn't done much in the last few months. Tommy Fleetwood, who's on the team, hasn't had a top 10 since March, and that was in the match play tournament. Matt Fitzpatrick's the same. Shane Lowry showing signs of life here and there, but not in terrific form right there. So Padraig has a lot of kind of holes to worry about in his team as well. But Padraig, I suppose, has the luxury of three picks, although he's kind of oddly tipped his hand early that Poulter and Garcia were likely to be picks. And to be fair, both of them have started to show signs of life recently. So Padraig, in effect, really has one pick, whereas Stricker, on paper, has six picks that he will make in a few days from now. And in reality, he's probably down to three picks because he has his six automatic qualifiers. And it seems that it's a lot on the three guys who finished just outside qualifying, which is Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, and Jordan Spieth. So he's got a lot of work to do because there are a good eight or nine reasonable contenders for the three picks that Steve Stricker has. And I don't think Padraig has that many names in his head for his last pick.
Okay, just a final question about Tiger Woods. I mean, people wonder, we know about his terrible car accident in, I think it was in LA, and we see his caddy now caddying out there, Joe LaCava, for somebody else. Is a Tiger comeback, I'm sure it's not imminent, is it possible or expected, or have we seen the end of Tiger?
All of the above.
Right.
Because I don't think anyone really knows at this point. If I think there's an assumption that if he's at all able to play, that he will try to do so, because it has been the man's life. He doesn't seem as though he's likely at this stage of life to turn around and say, you know what, I'm just going to go and put my feet up and try to be Father of the Year. I don't see that happening if he's physically able to play. He's certainly on his feet. You know, there have been photographs of him entering and leaving medical facilities that have appeared over here, but he's still on crutches. If he is able to play, he's a long way away from doing so. And to me, that's where it really becomes interesting as to whether or not he would do it, because at 45 years old, he probably only had a narrow window of relevancy.
Yes.
From this point on, it would take him probably the best part of a couple of years to get back to that level. But then again, he might have turned around and watched Phil Mickelson win a major championship a few weeks shy of his 51st birthday and thought, you know, I can do that too. I still have game out here. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up in some capacity at the Ryder Cup, whether not necessarily formally as a vice captain, but I could see Tiger showing up there. He's tight with Steve Stricker and showing up in some kind of mascot mold or trying to give a rah-rah speech to the guys in the locker room. I see him being involved to some extent. I'm not sure I ever see him playing in another Ryder Cup, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's at least tangentially related here at Whistling Straits in a few weeks.
Okay, Eamon, we're very grateful to you for joining us. I understand that Eamon is a golf writer and a broadcaster indeed with the Golf Channel, but his columns in Golf Week magazine and his writing in general, if you just Google it, you'll see it's of a very, very high quality indeed and rigorous as well. And it's well worth the effort to find it, which is just six clicks. Eamon, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We're grateful to Eamon, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.